Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much, Ruth, for this session and for your work in the caucus. It's lovely. Did that move by itself? No. Okay. I'm happy to be here, happy to be describing some work that I've done over the last couple of years with H1N1, mobilizing H1N1 and seasonal influenza, mobilizing networks of faith-based and community organizations. I did this work that I'm going to be reporting on with another faculty member at the School of Public Health, Iris Smith, who provided the evaluation advice to me and others and the technical evaluation technical assistance to the 10 participating sites. And Nima Iyer, now with an MPH, was the graduate student that supported a lot of the evaluation technical assistance work. As others, I have no financial relationships to disclose. The goal of the project was to mobilize existing capacity, but further strengthen and build capacity across a network of 10 different sites in order for them to be able to activate their trusted networks for assuring the reach to vulnerable, at-risk, and minority populations, first with 2009 H1N1 and then into the next year with seasonal influenza prevention activities. This work builds on work that was supported from 2001 to 2007 by the CDC, where the Interfaith Health Program held 9 institutes training 78 teams of religious and public health leaders around capacity, a covenant, a vision, and an action plan for eliminating health disparities in their communities. So when 2009 H1N1 came along, the HHS Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships reached out to us, and we reached out to this network. I act as an intermediary in this network of 78 sites, and I sort of put out a call to find which sites were interested and had the capacity to sort of jump on board pretty quickly in some of the H1N1 planning and mobilize and activate their networks for reaching vulnerable populations. So we engaged 10 sites, provided grants in capacity building, technical assistance, and during our second year invested more in providing a lot of evaluation technical assistance for them to set their objectives and determine the best ways to measure those and track those locally, and then support them with technical assistance in conducting that evaluation. And I'll speak more to that in a minute. So these are the 10 sites. And I like to show you this slide because it reflects the diversity of types of faith-based organizations that were involved. 5 of them were faith-based health systems. One was a federally qualified health center who had a pretty significant faith-based outreach program and working with congregations and also a Buddhist center. We had a couple of small nonprofit organizations that were faith-based or had strong commitments to working with the faith-based, with the faith community around disparity issues and mobilizing a large network of organizations. Some of the accomplishments, this is for the year 2010-2011 seasonal influenza. The number of vaccinations that were administered in 138 vaccine events. We worked with HHS's Office of Minority Health Initiative on their public-private partnership with Walgreens and learned a lot about distributing, working with private partners and distributing vouchers. And a lot of capacity building and training of volunteers for the vaccination events. So that's the sort of quantitative kinds of things that we can describe along with educational events. What the benefit of engaging local and community-based partners is they do a lot more than distribute flyers or broadcast PSAs. There's a lot of in-person educational events, and we found that that was really effective in dispelling a lot of myths and responding to mistrust in communities. So the educational outreach was a lot more in-person. And that in-person was made possible because these networks use and reach out through a lot of different non-traditional settings, soup kitchen, crisis centers, a variety of religious traditions, child care centers, and senior centers are some of the samples in the picture here. This is actually Detroit, on the streets in Detroit. The sites have a capacity, a great deal of sort of cultural competence in the networks that they have built relationships over the years. This was not starting fresh with what they have done in terms of building the bridge between health organizations, public health and healthcare organizations, and faith-based networks, but reaching diverse cultures, ethnicities, and religious traditions as well. So the first year of the initiative with H1N1 was funded by the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships at HHS. And we involved the CDC in that work, and they felt pretty excited about it, so decided to fund us last year and now this year around seasonal influenza. But when we made the shift from the HHS Partnership Center to the CDC, we strengthened our evaluation methods. And the focus of that was to really strengthen the capacity of these 10 sites in evaluating their work. We provided quite a bit of technical assistance. We developed a template for them to kind of tease out what they were trying to accomplish and what were going to be reasonable sources for measuring and tracking those accomplishments. We had regular conference calls, and then Dr. Smith had one-on-one technical assistance consultations with each site. The graduate assistant worked alongside her and kind of followed up with a lot of the sites. We did two different survey development bodies of work. One site, the CDC linked up the site with an EIS, a CDC EIS officer that was there that helped with survey development and sort of bringing it up to speed with strong items and questions that were consistent across different surveying efforts around immunization knowledges and practices so that we could begin to sort of generate valuable information from the sites. And that was more or less pilot tested with over 1,000 vaccination participants in Minneapolis last year, and further refinement is being done to the instrument, and we're using it across more of the 10 sites this year. So we're going to learn more about who we're reaching, why they chose that site, whether this was their first immunization or not, and different knowledge and attitudes about immunization. The second survey piece we did was the sites had asked for ways to understand their partnership relationships. So we borrowed, looked for some work around collaboration and partnership building and developed a 10-item survey. We set it up, an online survey, and asked for all the sites to send us their partners, and then we generated an invitation to participate in the survey so that the partners got the invitation from their local partner to participate in the survey, and generated really information that was for them. So some of the capacity building that we did was to generate information that would tell what they were doing as far as reaching persons with vaccinations, but also what capacity building that they were accomplishing with their partnerships in their local communities, but also how they could improve that as well. We developed a set of questions that we used in two different ways to for qualitative evaluation, learning about this. And one was through their report template to us, asking about challenges and best strategies for overcoming those challenges that they were finding in their communities, and then successes that were assuring the sustainability of their work. So those questions appeared both in their progress report templates, and then we have an in-person meeting in the spring of each year, and we had small group, we mixed the 10 sites up and had small group guided discussions where we had recorders at those and also had them record their key points on newsprint. And so we sort of looked at the themes from each of those qualitative sources and I guess I've already described that. So our qualitative data collection was focused on the challenges, best practice strategies, and overcoming those challenges, and capacities for success and sustainability. The most reported challenges in the order of reported were fear and mistrust, and we sort of broke that down into three different types of fear and mistrust. We decided not to separate out fear and mistrust. It was a little; those were too closely integrated to make them separate. Cultural and language barriers, health literacy, and weather. A lot of the sites that were like St. Louis, Chicago, Minneapolis, and Pennsylvania, and New York, and Massachusetts were, you know, we had a lot of really challenging snowstorms this year. Clinics were canceled. So that became one of the challenges this year. The other was high cost of vaccines. Since we were targeting minority, low-income, underinsured, or uninsured communities, the issue of paying $25 for a vaccine was a barrier and a challenge. Geographic location, and then some of the partnership barriers were limited time in communities. Some of the things that you mentioned in yours, and instrumentalism, this idea of being overused, you know, in partnership relationships. So I want to just say, how am I doing on time, Ruth?
8 minutes.
I've picked some of the strategies that they use to and I think this kind of highlights the unique capacity of some of these networks at circumventing or moving through or overcoming the number one challenge that they face, this fear and mistrust. Meeting the individuals where they were in the community settings that they're most familiar with. And this is a picture of a Buddhist center in Lowell, Massachusetts, where they're training promotores or lay health promoters. Educational materials were distributed at sites beforehand, and when possible, as I said, they tried to do educational events ahead of time. So there was like more of an opportunity for people to ask questions and have some of the you know, kind of myth-type things that would go so rapidly through communities before the CDC would even have time to, like, you know, like, know what was happening. It would already be sort of spread through the communities. But sometimes if there was opportunities to be there ahead and answer some of those questions. Our group out of Los Angeles, it's actually an international Taiwanese Buddhist group. They are very flexible. Public health, as resources have been cut in public health, they become less flexible in terms of their hours, their staffing, and infrastructure. And some of these groups, they'll you know, it's through the weekend, odd hours, they'll go set up. This group set up tents right near where migrant farm workers were. So there's a commitment to being very adaptable and flexible to the needs of people. often we talk about how important it is to engage community leaders, the faith-based leaders. This is a photo taken from Memphis, from the same network that Bishop Young is a part of. And during H1N1, the health system there, the faith-based health system, made the clergy in their congregational health network first responders. So they vaccinated a lot of the clergy so they could be models and be, you know, kind of part of that cadre of the health system. They were leaders in clergy and congregations, but they were first responders for the community in terms of being vaccinated and getting the word out. Meeting people where they are, found time, that's Minnesota's term, is really going where the people already are. And another sort of best practice strategy to to kind of sustain and nurture that that trusted relationship is, even though seasonal influenza takes part in one part of the year, that you can come the next year with much more success if you're engaged with them year round in other kinds of activities. That it's a more of a sustained relationship. We did a little mini pilot of looking at a religious health asset mapping initiative, using a little more deeper community-driven descriptive identifying what capacity was there in communities around faith-based organizations that could respond to a pandemic, or H1N1 could be there. And this is a map of Memphis. We did it with Memphis, Chicago, and also Detroit. This is what we're doing this year with reaching out. Again, the outreach through these networks, continuing our work supported by the CDC for the seasonal influenza this year. We're expanding and replicating this beyond the 10 sites. Through different adopter networks. And last week, we co-sponsored a webinar with ASTO and featured two of the 10 sites as exemplars of state and local health departments working with faith-based organizations. So that's one way I'm trying to like turn the 10 sites into being the replicators, instead of us being capacity builders, for them to be capacity builders. It's a little tricky because the grants are small and we want them to be focused on doing what they do well in their communities. But I'm trying to structure and use my time to structure opportunities for them that make it very easy for them to be the capacity builders. So this is a slide from one of our gatherings, and this is one of the persons from Memphis, one of our 10 sites. And then we're continuing to strengthen the evaluation capacity. As I said, I'm working more with the CDC on we're sort of adding some questions into that survey that we're standardizing across the 10 sites, adding questions some of the sites, and it's kind of being driven by what the sites want to learn. So they say, we want to know more about this, like why people are choosing not to have a vaccine. So they're figuring out where to gather that information, and the CDC then is saying, well, these are good questions that are being used by such and such survey efforts, and you know, they've been tested questions, and so we're adding that into the survey instrument. So in that way, I try to be an intermediary that brokers the capacity of the 10 sites to inform sort of the CDC's best thinking about outreach and reaching vulnerable populations, but I try to also leverage the flow of information to the community that strengthens their capacity as well. I think that was my last slide. Yes. Thank you all.